Good morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. Mr. John McKay, how you doing over there?
Maybe breathing a little bit easier.
Oh, yes. Okay, gotcha.
Stagnant air earlier this week.
Yes, that was. But I got to tell you, the temperatures and everything, I appreciated it warming back up a little bit.
A little.
But, I mean, we've been pretty lucky. We just finished with a really fantastic October, and the market has been really, really active. You know, it's still easy to show homes. I will tell you, though, we had that pesky little daylight savings time, which I think works against real estate agents.
Well, the state unanimously passed it. One of the few things they could agree on. But as I understand it, the feds have to approve it, and they're too busy, the House, chasing their tails.
Okay. So
to get anything done.
What makes it rough for real estate agents is where it was getting darker later after work when we would go look at houses. I do feel that now, if you go after work at 5, you better have your flashlights with you.
Yes.
So this is the realtor's time of year where you are stocking up on the flashlights. But overall, like I said, the market's still just screaming along. Interest rates are super low. The weather's been decent, so we've been able to get a lot of buyers under contract. We've kind of hit that rush where if you go under contract in the next week, it's still possible to close in 2019, but it is going to be very, very tight. We had a couple VA appraisals and lenders last week tell us that they were 50 to 55 days out on closings. Some of our local lenders are a little bit quicker, but we had a couple files like that to where we are already into 2020. But if you found something in the next couple days, still very possible to get into a new home by the first of the year. And there's a lot of people taking advantage of low rates and doing that right now. Before we jump into this week's topic, we always like to start off with our crazy celebrity real estate story. This one coming out of Realtor.com. It seems, now this is not a show I watch, so it might not be as applicable out there to
okay.
me. It says, Craig Tester of the Curse of Oak Island is selling his magnificent Michigan mansion. McKay, I understand that is some show where an island off of Nova Scotia, they run around digging up tunnels and trying to find treasure. You don't watch it either.
I'm drawing a blank on
okay,
that one.
Gotcha. Well, anyway, if it's any testament to their producer and their engineer on that show has this incredible, and I would call it almost eccentric, 5,000 square foot property in Michigan that is right on the lake, and it is all windows facing the lake. Now, he is a treasure hunter, but it is interesting that this is almost a $4 million house that he is selling, and it is the first time that I have ever seen purple lilac cabinets in the kitchen.
Okay.
And so, I mean, there's some very eccentric things going on with this. Now, having this property makes me think he has found some sort of other treasure somewhere else.
Yeah.
Or he worked really hard at a previous job to pay for this. But like I said, not a show I watch, but for your Curse of Oak Island fans out there, go to Realtor.com, type in celebrity real estate, and pretty cool to see absolutely just a modern design with a wall of windows facing the lake. Not my style interior, but definitely cool to take a look at and see what almost $4 million will buy you on the lake there. Now, we always like to temper that with a more realistic approach to what is happening in real estate in the Tri-Cities right now. And this happened probably three or four times over the course of the last 2 weeks. And we always like to take what's happening in the market, what questions people are asking, and bring that to the show. And so a number of times we had people call up the office and ask to speak only directly to our listing agent who had listed properties and then wanted to only see it with the listing agent and then utilize that agent as a dual agent on their residential transaction, which we at Kenmore team don't do. Unless there was a massive insistence by the buyer, at which case we would have to then get the seller's permission, in our viewpoint, to allow that to happen, meaning we would have to go to the seller and say, would you want to be in this position or would you want to not have that sale and be in that position? So it takes me back to the fundamentals of what's going on in the marketplace and why are these types of calls increasing? So I thought I would take that back to the basic level because it really comes down to a trend that is happening right now in the industry. And that is talking about how agents get paid. So looking at your agent that's out there showing you houses and working with you as a buyer, how does that agent get paid? So I thought I'd break that down a little bit so then the consumers could understand what's happening in the marketplace. And so the majority of agents that you work with in town are going to be part of what's called the MLS, which stands for Multiple Listing Service.
Yes.
And basically what that is in layman's terms is that is a cooperative marketplace for all of the agents that are members of that in the Tri-Cities to work with. And now, mind you, there is a minority of agents that are not members of that, so this would not apply to them. But for the general agent that you run into that is at a, I'd say like a big five or six at Coldwell Banker, at Windermere, at KW, at the Kenmore team, at Schneider, if you went down the list, the majority of those members you ran into would be participants of the MLS.
So they dump all the homes onto one big website and everybody helps sell them.
Correct. And so the key to that, McKay, that has been done in the past and the way that that has functioned in the past is that many times what an agent would do that was go, a seller would say, I'm ready to sell my house. I want to utilize that exposure of the MLS. So they would have a agent come out to their house, which we would are more commonly referencing in the industry as the listing agent that is going to take that listing. So that agent would come out with the house and they come out to the house. They would meet with the seller and they would say, here's what I'm going to do for you. And to do all of this, to put it into the MLS, to advertise on my website and multiple and hundreds of other websites, it's going to cost me. I'm going to list your house for X percentage. And that's a negotiable amount. And different business models have different amounts. That could be 1%, 2%, 3%, 6, 7, 8, 9. Giving a specific amount or saying there's a customary amount, we don't do because that violates basically antitrust issues and collusion. So that is a negotiable amount between you and your agent. But for just to make math simple, let's pick a number that's not normal just to make the math simple. And so I don't get myself in trouble, McKay. So let's say 10%. And I, granted, I'm going to tell you I'd have thoughts about that and that is not what I'm saying our rates are, but let's just use that because that makes the math simple. So you would say to that seller, I'm going to list your house, I'm going to charge 10% to do that, and what I'm going to do with that 10% is I am going to take half of it, I'm going to take 5% of it, and I'm going to put it into the MLS as my cooperating rate, meaning I'm going to say all of the other agents out there, if you bring a buyer to this house and sell this property, we're going to pay that firm 5% for doing that. So we're going to take half that amount. So if that amount was five, then you would say, I'm going to, you know, and you were cutting it in half, you'd say, I'm going to offer 2.5% to that person, or, you know, vice versa, whatever you negotiated and thought was the best strategy with the seller. So in that case, though, that charge is technically, and that contract is going with the seller to firm A. That charged the 10, and then they took that 10 and gave 5 of it to another firm, to another agent that brought the buyer. So what's been happening in that situation, and so that agent, when they do that, so the buyer, in reality, and a lot of people argue that it's built into the price. The buyer that's working with agent B, who is driving around and showing all of these houses that have cooperating percentages, the buyer themselves never actually wrote a check for that amount, meaning they find a house that they love, they work with their agent, they get it under contract, they come to closing, and the buyer gets their, you know, they pay $200,000 for the house, and they close on it. And in the example we gave with 10%, so $20,000 basically is owed to the listing firm. And the listing firm says, of that 20, give 10 to the buyer's agent that brought the buyer. So the buyer themselves, even though that agent B had agency duties to the buyer themselves never actually wrote that check or had anything to do with that commission agreement. It was paid by the seller. Now, a lot of people argue that that's inflated into the price of the home. So by paying that amount for the home, the buyer technically did pay that. That's the that's the reverse argument that's going on there. But as far as writing a check out physically, no. So what has happened is what a lot of people think happen can happen, and why we get the phone calls that I talked about early on in the show. Is that a lot of folks in that situation are thinking if they get an agent to agree to dual representation, they call the listing agent direct and say, I only want to see it with you. Their hope is that they can go and leverage that agent and say, look, if I write it up with you and you're a dual agent and you represent both of us, I mean, it's one contract. It's the same amount of work to you. Can we just get a deal on the house and lower that instead of 10? Why don't we just go down to 5? Or I'll tell you what, we'll give you a bonus. We'll give you 6. And you can just charge the seller less, and then the net will be the same to the seller, and you can be a dual agent. So that's what the idea is, McKay. McKay, do you see anything wrong with this situation?
Well, it just kind of sounds funny. It doesn't sound...
I love getting your natural reaction on the show.
It sounds kind of like somebody's trying to cut corners or go under the table.
So now, originally that seller was represented solely and exclusively by that listing agent. And so they have certain duties. They price
property. Any problem with the duality?
And so now what they're trying to do is balance those duties that they owe to the seller, because now they would also have a new set of duties that they would owe to the buyer. And in that dual agent position, you start to get into a situation where can you truly represent both parties in that situation?
Yeah. So the dual agent thing is not the most ideal
scenario. And I'm not saying you can't do it. I'm just saying that it changes the dynamic of the transaction, and you have to be very, very careful in those situations. Now, a very, very sophisticated buyer that maybe has done 30 transactions and they buy homes all the time and sell homes, but maybe they flip homes and they're used to that, you know, they would have a different set of skill set, and they might find a way or feel comfortable to make that situation work. How the industry is changing is the industry is attacking that model. The disruptors are attacking that paid model, and they're attacking it on that list side to lower the amount, the total amount charged. They feel that by lowering the amount to the consumer, they will be able to lower housing prices because of that. When we come back from the break, though, we're going to talk about the most vulnerable people in these situations and why they might need representation and would not consider this disruption as an advantage to them.
We will be right back on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. Our topic this week, we've been getting a lot of questions about how do agents get paid? Where does that money come from in a transaction? And what does that look like? There's been a lot of news articles and fanfare about agents' commissions now being published on different websites, on Zillow, on MLS sites, as to what the compensation is to the buyer's agent. The intent there is to add transparency to that process. And it's an industry where there's been a lot of attempt at disruption. And so I kind of reckon it to the site of there's a lot of technology companies out there that want to, what I call, Uberize the real estate process. Mm-hmm. They've seen massive disruption in, say, the travel agency with Expedia and Kayak and Hotels.com. And then,
but in, you know, that works the same way.
Yeah.
A lot of times, and we've talked on our travel show about this, especially if you're going outside the country.
Yes.
You don't even want to do that, because what happens if you're stuck in a foreign country and you lose your passport or your something happens?
Yes, exactly.
When you do it on your own, unless you're a highly trained agent, you can step on a landmine like that.
Absolutely. And then with the transportation industry, you know, they want to, you know, there's been a lot of comparisons as real estate agents as cab drivers and, you know, the new websites as that. And so
Uber, you're using your car as a taxi. You're picking up person from A to B. This isn't a complicated financial transaction.
And that is the key.
Wow.
Is what they've done is they've been able to Uberize a process that had, say, maybe four people involved. Maybe the driver, the passenger, a dispatcher, and potentially maybe where you're going or your pickup spot.
Yeah.
And so the difference being is it's a little more complicated than, can I get from my house in South Richland to the airport versus can I get an in-depth financial evaluation of my home? Oh yeah. And negotiate a deal with somebody. And instead of four people being involved, we generally have talked about between 35 to 40 different people touching that transaction.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a much more complicated process to Uberize. And then it also involves a lot of dynamic decision making that is hard to make transactional. So do I think it could get there? At some point, it's possible. There's a lot of things I don't know about with artificial intelligence and you know, and evaluating the properties and responding. I could go down a huge rabbit hole about that.
You see what this is leading to, people?
But I don't think that in our current state, at least for a number of years to come, that we will be looking at that as a possibility. And in some instances, it's, you know, I talk about who's most vulnerable in that situation. So by disrupting, what they're attacking in that disruption process right now is how a buyer's agent is getting paid that is helping a buyer, and getting rid of that first. So I look at who's most vulnerable in that situation, and that would be either a first-time home buyer, would potentially, someone who has not done these transactions before, so they don't have a point of reference to how they can go. So if you get rid of the person that is legally required and has duties and has licensing duties to protect that buyer, if you get rid of that person in the transaction, then you only have the seller, which has their best interest in mind, And a buyer that is unrepresented by somebody that has the ability to do that. It reminds me of the old adage, what they would call it in our training classes was buyer beware. Mm-hmm. And so I really feel like the disruption cycle, what we have to be careful about is the disruption cycle could lead back to that. Just by the nature of the dollars that are involved in that situation.
Why not just meet up on a street corner like Craigslist and exchange titles to your homes?
That is what it is leading towards.
Wow.
For sure.
And what are they going to do? Uberize dentistry next?
McKay's getting worried about his crowns over there. Okay. So that's a little bit. So current model, you know, like I said, that before the break, we talked about seller pays. You take that amount, it is split. There's some sort of split done. Buyer mm-hmm. agent is paid from the seller's funds, you know, from those funds at closing. Now, does all of that money go to the agent that was working with that buyer? It doesn't. In fact, legally in the state of Washington, that agent cannot be paid directly. They have to be paid through their brokerage.
So the money goes to the brokerage and then the brokerage pays them.
Exactly. So in that scenario, if it was one of my buyer agents that had brought that buyer and we had sold, let's say we had sold a Keller Williams listing. So we would then get it. So we would get a check. So the escrow company would send a check to us at closing. They would have filled out. Keller Williams would have said, Kenmore team gets 2.5% of the purchase price or 3 or 4 or 5 X%. And so then what they would do is they would send that money to Kenmore team. And then I have an agreement with my agents because we have a certain amount of overhead that we, you know, we pay for the building mm-hmm. and the computers and the training and licensing. So then we have a percentage. Then we take, so let's say 5,000 of that came in. Then we would split up with our agent that was working with that buyer. Say we take, you know, 2,500 for the brokerage for overhead and 2,500 goes to the agent. Or there are some very low cost brokerages and they might say we are doing everything virtually and we don't offer any training to our agents. We just only have veteran agents. Mm-hmm. And so we as the brokerage only take $400 and we give $4,600 to the agent. Mm. So there's different models depending upon the agent you're working with. And a lot of times that can affect how much the brokerage keeps, how much the agent gets. So just because you see that number that went to your company, it's not always representative of how much that agent is getting. Mm. That is a separate contract that agent has written with their brokerage. So there's a lot of layers to this. Trying to determine pay, we come up with a lot of different layers. But I wanted people to have some perspective of what they might be giving up in those situations. And as those dollars came down, what benefits they might be losing. Now, on the opposite end, you have if those dollars go up, what benefits are you getting? Are you getting your money's worth? Are you getting that advertising? Are you getting that representation? Are you getting access to that technology? So in the end, it leads to level of service versus rate of pay and how that's being structured. So that's what's going on in the real estate industry right now. That's what we're looking at. We're always monitoring the next best spot for technology that's going to deliver a better experience to the consumer. And if that technology has economies of scale, eventually it will lead to savings. If that technology is very expensive and leads to higher level of service, maybe not necessarily. So that's the balance that you're looking at. What am I after when I decide which agent to hire? Do I believe that three-dimensional tours and $15,000 cameras gives me a better presence online? Well, then maybe I look at an agent that is more full service. Am I mm-hmm. not concerned about that because I have a vacant lot that 29,000 people drive by every day? And I think if I put up a sign, it'll sell in 5 minutes. Maybe I don't need that high level of service. So you got to look at your situation too and decide, what you're trying to hire. Maybe you've tried a discount and your property didn't sell. And so you went that discount rate. Now you're looking for a different model and you're going to go full service because it's more important to get it sold versus the net. We're dealing with a lot of those calls right now too, where, hey, I went with a discount. I went with a discount broker, didn't get the exposure I wanted, didn't get the professional photos I wanted. And even in this hot market, our property didn't sell. Can you guys take a look at it? So we've been going on a lot of those appointments right now. In fact, already starting to prep people for early spring market in February. Because if we don't have Snowmageddon like we had last year, and we have an early spring market, those appointments we're going on right now and prepping for. So it's not too early.
Wow.
Go to KenmoreTeam.com and give us a call if you would like one of those appointments. Before we wrap up here, I do want to get some awesome inventory that we still have. Total high-end luxury property. Custom built, fantastic. This is 984 Allen White Drive in Richland. This is a 5-bedroom, 5-bath Rambler with a basement up in South Richland, Sundance Ridge, 4,688 square feet. This home is incredible. It's got two main level masters, which is just awesome because one of the masters was developed to be used either with wheelchair or walker. So if you needed that setup, they did zero entry showers, extra wide hallways. So one master is completely set up for that. Another master set up normal. But so you get just an amazing setup if you needed that in your family. This house is built for that. Super chef's kitchen, commercial refrigerator, freezer, 5-burner range, double ovens. Incredible views of the Yakima River. Also, 4 ensuite bedrooms. So attached baths to that. Absolutely incredible. Great location. And that's coming in at $849,900. And I tell you, this house is full custom. You cannot rebuild it for that right now.
Wow.
Pick number 2, 3157 Red Hawk. This is out in Richland. Horn Rapids community. This is a like new Titan built home. Great builder out there. 1676 square feet, 3-bed, 2-bath, Rambler, vaulted ceilings, custom built ins, LVP flooring, tons of natural light. I mean, this is just a great, great property. Fully fenced yard, great for entertaining. Out there in Horn Rapids, if you want to be close to golf, then you want to be close to a bunch of new stuff that's going in out there. This is priced at $365,000. And then pick number 3, this is an opportunity. 192203. This is out in Plymouth. We had this property about a month ago, sold. But the property just flipped and went active back on the market. The buyer had an issue with their contingent sale property. And so they weren't able to execute. And this is Columbia River Views. So Plymouth, down there on your way to Umatilla before you cross the river, Plymouth. 3-bedroom, 2-bath Rambler. 0.57 of an acre, a 40-by-20 shop, 2160 square foot property, original hardwood floors, 2 living areas, updated HVAC, updated windows, huge backyard, and then the view is just absolutely incredible. And that's priced at $250,000. You can't get Columbia River Views $250,000. Quick drive out of town towards Umatilla, and it is just a great, great property. So if you have any questions about any of the properties you heard about, go to KenmoreTeam.com, shoot us a message, give us a call. We'd be glad to help. The market's still hot. The weather's still great. Let's get you in a house before the new year.
And we'll be right back here next week on News Talk 870.